It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Should be a little bit of fear here in Declare Your Independence. Of me, Ernest Hancock, we're going on about various and different sundry things, and we have Julian Assange from WikiLeaks. The Pentagon, no less, wants to have a talk with him. They just want to seek his cooperation. Maybe a little bit of hide. And this is taken from April 18th this year. So just a little bit ago, to where he's talking about this. And I remember they tried to shut down WikiLeaks before, and it went before a judge. I think it was California. Maybe I'll look it up here in the break or while this is playing. And it was ruled that, hey, you know, you can't shut this down. But in the meantime, Switzerland, you know, or Sweden said, you know, just bring it over. We'll take care of it. You can host your servers here. Problem solved. So what's going to happen? Is he going to get renditioned? Has he already been? They can't find him. You know, they give the impression he's hiding out. Maybe they already got him. You ever think of that? Well, we'll see if these cables, this information, the State Department stuff that was taken down by a young man, Manning. You know, what's his name? Army Intelligence Specialist Bradley Manning, you know, from Potomac, Maryland. When he's a 22-year-old Army Intelligence guy, goes, I think I'm going to send this over. Well, Daniel Ellsberg of the Pentagon Papers said, look, man, they don't take this none too good. They're not smiling about this one. They want this. Because what's it saying? It's all about the inner working CIA, State Department, you know, who controls who in the Middle East and their government at the highest levels. Do we got a good record of picking good guys? You know, a Karzai in Afghanistan, you know, gag me. You know, what's his name? They brought over Mr. I'll BS you and whatever we do to go and attack Iraq and put me in charge. You know, how's that working out? You know, we have Pakistan, you know, scumbags. You know, Marcos, Philippines. You know, we got Noriega in Panama. You know, we have the Shah in Iran. You know, Saddam is our buddy in Iraq. You know, they got the House of Saud, you know, families in Saudi Arabia. You know, they're not loved by everybody. You know, what kind of track record we got? What's the goal here? What the heck? Well, you're going to play WikiLeaks. You know, you got deals and stuff. Let's see what he has to say about it. Here we go.
The question is what advice he has on protecting sources, because so many people just simply use email and reveal their identity by doing that.
On the one hand, I can say you're all screwed. You are all totally screwed because everything is going onto the internet. I mean, I was with, I won't name him, but one of the most respected investigative journalists in the United States. And he checked his email in Gmail, was logged into Google, and then he goes and starts searching stuff. Well, he's still logged into Google. So you can saw his name in his Google searches. And Google keeps a history of everything being searched for. And he was searching for things on the story he was developing, and he's a national security reporter. I mean, you're just screwed. I mean, the amount of information that is being collected on everything that is done, and it's just impossible to work and communicate in a normal way unless you have technical specialists dedicated to do this for you, means that your information trails and your sources' information trails are just everywhere. However, actually, the chance of a source being busted is very, very low. even with that developing problem. If someone actually has the energy and inclination in the career interest to do that, they can. But the chance is very, very low that a source will be busted.
In Washington with an employee of the National Security Agency.
Yeah, right. But this is a country of 300 million people. So how many sources get publicly at least busted a year? What is it, 10 in the United States? 300 million people. So it's actually nothing. I mean, the chance of your source getting run over by a car are vastly higher than they are of being caught. But there's a perceptual illusion, because every time a source is caught, their name is, even their face is in the paper. But every time the New York Times uses a source to inform a story, it's like the source never existed in the first place, because it's basically an anarchist act, right? Leaking is basically an anarchist act, and to be a mainstream publication, you can't be lionizing sources doing anarchist acts all the time. So you don't see the source mentioned at all in the story. All you see, documents seized by the New York Times, all you see an official speaking anonymously. But that's such a small reference that people don't see the source. So there's a perceptual bias that sources are getting busted all over, but there's not the perceptual understanding that sources are succeeding all over, and that the actual chance of being busted is extremely low, even in this incredibly aggressive environment.
Yeah. So what is the future? You know, they're going to try and get everybody, but everybody is a potential leak. You know, here we have a very interesting way of looking at things, where you have so many people with so much information. It's like, you know, when I was chairman of the Libertarian Party here in Arizona, Maricopa County, I would get so much stuff about the inner workings of what was happening, because we had a newspaper that we did and so on. And they just, you know, who else are you going to tell? Nobody, you know, the media would do it. They'd tell me. And it's, you know, the golf caddies, you know, the restroom valets, you know, the car valets, the waiters, you know, the cameraman, the grip, the guy that does the sound, you know, for newspaper, I mean, for the television reporters and the engineers, the editors. I mean, we're everywhere. You know, they just come and they just say, man, you need to know this. And it got so bad that I'm just, you know, it's a WikiLeaks thing. Yeah, we put it out there, you know, then what? You're going to tell me, somebody's going to come up to me and they're going to tell me, you know what? You know, government's really, 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 really bad. What are you going to do? Add another really? Let's see if we can get one more really from Jeff Chelsea in Massachusetts calling. What do you got to say, Jeff?
Well, yeah. Basically, as far as rendition is concerned, what the American sheeple don't realize, the ones who are for the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, is all this rendition stuff and torture and all this stuff is going to eventually come here to America, and that's the.
What do you mean eventually? it's already here, man.
Well, what I mean is it's going to be widespread, basically. In other words, it'll be a common thing to see a black man come up and snatch a Christian off the street who's mouthing off at the government, or like Nazi Germany or communist Russia. Snatch a rabbi off the street if he's mouthing off, and stick people in concentration camps today.
What is your line? I mean, you know, this has been a conversation I've had with you know, friends and family and supporters and you know, people that are active in the freedom community and so on. Is what's your line? When do you actually start to either leave or fight back or get off the couch? Or, I mean, you know, a lot of us are engaged, but a lot of people aren't. How engaged are you in this? I mean, are you out doing something, or are you just educating yourself? I mean, what are you actually doing?
Well, actually, to be honest with you, I'm supporting an evangelist. I do help people out, and I did campaign for a couple of people way back, local people. I do vote. I call up talk shows. I don't write any blogs or anything. I work a full time job. You'll hear me quite a bit calling up talk shows. I do my own research. The best that I can, and there's only 24 hours in a day, and you need to sleep for 8 hours. So you divide that. I should be doing more, but But you know what? People can only do so much in their in what they can do, and you can't do everything. I mean, I don't need any groups or anything. Massachusetts is very, very liberal. I mean, it's extremely liberal. You're pretty much hamstrung to what you can do in this state.
Well, define that. When you say it's very liberal, how does that manifest itself? What does that mean?
That means we were one of the first states to have gay marriage. I mean, physically speaking, I mean, I hear the music.
Well, you know, I tell you what, we'll hold you over because we'll ask you some questions because I want to get a beat in on what you're thinking because I can see, you know, like WikiLeaks, they came out, they're founded by Chinese dissidents. You know, that's where that came from. You know, but of course, a lot of other people. It's just the world is not doesn't recognize borders anymore. Just truth.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Information. Yeah, a little Boston from my friend Jeff Chelsea from Massachusetts calling in. You know, one thing I wanted you to just share with me, Jeff, is, you know, being from Massachusetts, you know, a lot of people moved to Arizona from Massachusetts. I mean, it's a whole bunch. And it's they're getting away from. I want to leave. I want to leave. We'll get away from the liberalism. But I need you to define that. What do you mean by that?
I'll explain it to you. Basically, it's like this. Number one, if I was a liberal, let's say if I was completely sold out liberal, a liberal is somebody who is for bigger government, is dependent upon government. If I was a liberal, I would be for abortion, pro choice. I would define it as choice. If I was a liberal, I would be for homosexual marriage, which is what this state has. If I was a liberal, I would be for the dividing of Jerusalem and giving Israel over to the Palestinians, who are the bad guys. I mean, if I was,
you know, this is it. You're taking a definition, you're throwing a bunch of stuff in there, and I'm sure there's a lot of liberals that would go, I'm not for that or that or that, or they would say there's a lot of conservatives for that. It's just all about state control. I mean, as a libertarian, I'll tell you what, you know, may surprise you is I'm not for government being involved in heterosexual marriage. It's a contract as far as I'm concerned. And every time, you know, I got married in Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
I moved to Arizona, and my marriage contract's different now. Oh, and then they passed laws to make it even different. And I'm going, wait a minute. I don't get to determine this contract. I can't pick, you know, one of 200 contracts out of a men's magazine or something. You know, how is it that the government gets to determine this contract? And then, while I'm married for 25 years, they change it. So I'm just, the state involvement, when you say liberal, I'm going, heck, a lot of that applies to conservatives. I don't know. I can't tell the difference.
Well, let me expand it, which is, somebody who is truly conservative, their views will line up with the Bible, which is the Bible says it's wrong to steal, the Bible says it's wrong to be homosexual, the Bible
says you can have a bunch of wives.
Well, what I mean is you're asking for definitions, so I'm giving them the best that I can.
Well, see, my point is that it keeps changing. You know,
that's what the problem is,
and so I'm kind of, when you got like someone like Dr. Ron Paul runs as a Republican libertarian, that was conservatism, that was what it used to mean, and it evolved, it kept changing. I saw it change.
Yeah, neocons.
Well, you're getting, you know, this is, you know, we need you to call back in another time. I got a guest in the studio.
Okay.
I wanted to let you finish your thought.
Okay.
Thanks, you're
welcome. Have a good one.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Jeff. You know, who we got in now I wanted to talk to is our economic columnist on Freedom's Phoenix, Jack Gregson, stopped in by. And he's helping Morpheus doing some stuff. And I go, wait, come in here. I want to talk about something. Let me tell you what I want to talk about. I want to talk about Japan. Oh, my goodness. We have new Japan minister warns country may default. Oh, I bet you that sent a couple of little what the hecks, you know, through the planet. You know, when he was Japan's finance minister, I think he said Naoto Kan advised loose monetary policy to end two decades of deflation. Yeah, we need to play this Federal Reserve thing. We'll print money. We'll do all this kind of. And now all of a sudden he's going, as we see that from the Eurozone confusion that started in Greece, there is a risk of default if growing public debt is neglected and trust lost in the bond market. Because the bond market is them just keep asking for more money. I mean, that's, you know, the reason they can spend money is because people keep giving it to them. Well, who's giving it to them? Are we going to try and bankrupt the Chinese or something? You know, the money that I, you know, this is, I mean, dang. So tell me, from your perspective, what does this announcement, why would he even say that?
I think he's probably afraid. Everybody should be afraid of this. It's not unforeseen. I mean, the Japanese government, Ernie, for the past 20 years has been building bridges to nowhere. Okay, they've just been on this massive building spree, building infrastructure. Okay, they're actually building things, unlike the U.S., with their stimulus plan. But they've had 20 years of stimulus plans, and they've had almost negative interest rates on what they're charging at the banks. They've had zombie banks for 20 years. And who did they listen to?
The
United States.
Well, you know, what they call it the lost decade, or it's going to be decades, but, you know, the whole concept is that, you know, we're just not, they're too big to fail. And they're mostly, you know, state operated anyway. I mean, think about it. They would build Japanese cars and they would transport them on ships that were subsidized by the government. You know, so the transportation costs. So it's all this kind of subsidy thing because the industry is Japan, you know, and it got to the point to where once you go down that road, then you just might as well just pack it up because, you know, you're not going to have any kind of a free market determining what's really happening. And it became even more advantageous for them to build car manufacturing here in the United States. It was cheaper. And they got away from the unions and so on. They went to Tennessee, Kentucky, that kind of thing. And now when General Motors got taken over by the government, what happened? They went after Toyota. You're unsafe. They just hammered on them. I got there's plenty of General Motors that needs a lot of attention. But, you know, so there's a campaign going back and forth and back and forth. And I all of a sudden, from out of the blue, because you knew it was amazing that Japan lasted as long as they did. And all of a sudden, for them to say this, there's something else coming. You do not say something like this unless you already know something.
Well, they know something. It's called demographics. Demographics rule the world. And, I mean, I've known that for probably 25 or 30 years. And somebody that kept hammering that home was Charles Goyette. Demographics rule the world. You can't go against it. And the Japanese have a dire problem. They have this massive aging population with very, very few young people to pay for all the privileges that the elderly Japanese enjoy.
You know, that's one thing that they really, really, really have invested a lot in robotics. I mean, they're getting to the point, it's like iRobot, man. They need to have somebody that's going to go around and take grandma, you know, to the bathroom. And they're, you think I'm kidding? I mean, within 5-10 years, they have to have it. I mean, it's not like they, oh, it'd be nice, wouldn't this be cool? They have to have it just to supply the elderly. And the one thing that's interesting is that they're at least foretelling it. You know, they're getting ready for it. They're seeing that this is going to happen. So I don't know if it's a money thing or just a social thing or whatever, but why is the birth rate down, or nobody's having children, or I mean, what's the reasoning?
Russia has the same problem. There's I think somewhere around 1.1 to 1.4 children per couple, so they're not reproducing fast enough to replace themselves, and it's basically the same situation we have here. That's why a lot of industrialists and people that were elite in this company, the elite in this country, wanted to bring in Hispanics, was because they realized that the birth rate had fallen so low that there was not going to be enough people to subsidize Social Security. And so they flooded the U.S. with illegal immigrants. That was something that was done on purpose starting in about 1981. And in Japan, they hate foreigners. They want a homogeneous society. They will not tolerate foreigners. Koreans are foreigners. They'll let them be maids, but they have very strict rules on immigration in Japan. And it's a very different society.
The entire world is going to change. I don't think it's necessarily at the end of this is going to be worse. It's going to be a lot different, and it's going to be based on the young communicating directly with each other. They're going to determine what the future is. And I tell you one thing, they're not going to pay for all the mistakes that have been foisted upon them. They can't. It's not possible.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I got a cattle prod for you, and a little taser. Yeah, the government's just tasering the stampeding the herd towards freedom. Now, because where are they going to go? You know, human beings just inherently don't want to be in cages. Now, you have to give them the perception that they're not in a cage. That's how you do it. You go, no, it's a free range chicken. You know, there was a very interesting YouTube that we had up one time, and you just can't really do it for radio. But what it was is he was talking about how you look at borders and you're just looking at different farms. You know, we're just livestock. And that's kind of the point that they were making. And they were saying that the more free societies are, or animals or anything, the more productive they are. Yeah, free range chickens. You know, they produce more, they're healthier, you know, but in the end, they're chicken McNuggets. They're everything, you know. Yeah, we're free. We're more free than them, relatively. We're freer, but in the end, you're getting sheared. So, you know, I'm okay. So what do we do? I my family and I tell you straight up, we're looking to be able to just survive. You know, we have our children are now 20 to 24, two boys, two girls, two of them married, the second grandkid on the way. You know, they all are productive, young. I want them to be able to survive this thing, you know, rebuild afterwards, or do we have to go to another country? Is there another country? You know, can you go somewhere else? You know, there's a lot of people that have resources that are preparing for that very thing. People I know, people that we post on Freedom's Phoenix. They're reporting from Argentina, Costa Rica, Ecuador, Austria. You know, we're reporting from not there. How remote can you get in the United States? You cannot get property in almost any state without there being some property tax, some kind of tax, move around, traveling. You know, ID, please, checking something, land of the free, home of the brave. I got to share this with you, Neil. I know a lot of you be upset, you conservatives. I got a thing about this Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag. That bothered me for a long time. And I don't do it anymore. I mean, I'll stand and be respectful. There's no sense in, you know, causing a ruckus. But it's not coming out of my mouth. Now I'll stand there and, you know, be respectful of other people doing, you know, I'm good. You know, but I know where the Pledge of Allegiance came from. It was Bellamy, the socialist. You know, back at the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, it was all about getting us on a collective. And then in the 50s, Eisenhower put in the, you know, under God thing. That kind of got the conservatives on board. Okay. You know, it used to be that you had your hands at your side, the school kids. They made this a big thing. It was the National Education Association. They went through the teachers. They made a big deal. They got all worked up for a year or two that there one day, I think it was in May or something, they go, one day, all the children across the country is going to pledge allegiance to the flag. You know, the segregated schools, you got the black children over here and the white children over there. They're in separate schools, but they're going to pledge allegiance to the same flag. So I'm going, okay. So they you had your hands at your side and your right hand, and you go, I pledge allegiance to the flag, and you went palm up, and it almost looked like a Nazi salute. Well, after World War II, that didn't go over too big, so they did it, hand over heart thing. And it was an effort to put us all on a single plantation mindset. And it just kept progressing from there. I tell you, in my own personal life, when I really started to recognize what was happening, and at the time I didn't really understand it as my father was explaining it to me, when we would travel from, we used to live in Florida when I was a kid until I was 12. My father's family's from there. My mother's family is from Mesa here in Arizona. Her side of the family was part of the Mormon invasion of the Southwest. I mean, they came in, it's called the area Lehi, and that's why you have such a high concentration of the Mormon community in Mesa. And they had the temple there and all that stuff. And my whole side of my mother's family is Mormon. One of my younger sisters is Mormon. So I get it. I understand. I know the whole spiel and everything. Not my thing, but, you know, I understand. And it's all about family. Well, I remember my father, he was, you know, not a big giant supporter of just BS. I mean, it just didn't flush with him. And I remember us driving from on vacations every summer. We would come out here from Florida every other summer or something like that. It'd be a 2-week deal. And we'd drive out. We loved going on the off roads. And a lot of times they didn't have the freeway system. The interstates were not as sophisticated as they are now, when like every single major town was connected and had all these interstates in it, because they didn't even start the interstate until the 50s. So 10, 15 years later, I'm a young kid in the mid-60s, we're going out on vacation. A lot of times you had, you know, state roads and highways that went to different towns and communities. And I remember there were just creative things to get you to pull over and stop at their big, giant, old Mother Hubbard lived in a shoe. I mean, it was actually a big, giant house shoe. Or it was a A&W root beer mug the size of a building. I mean, you know, you had all these different motels that were teepees and spaceships, and every community around the country across, it was all different. There was just different. People talked different. You know, they had different styles. You know, they liked different cars. They liked different kinds of houses. You know, everything was different. And you could tell you're in different parts of the country. We were not this homogenized, sitcom, Leave It to Beaver kind of, you know, thing. It was much different. Well, they use television. They try to get you kind of on the same plantation, thinking the right way, get your mind right. And, of course, you know, commercial. Then you had, like we were talking about, the Century of the South, the BBC production on how they used Freud's nephew came over and did, you know, said, we're gonna go ahead and make sure. No, he was Bellamy. I think it was Bernays was the socialist guy. Maybe I got that wrong. Yeah, I'll look it up. But the what happened was he came over and made sure that we were conditioned in such a way to buy things that we didn't really need. And to do that, you have to get people thinking the same. Yeah, you know, everybody needs to have a new Thunderbird. Oh, man, you don't got the right kind of shoes? I remember as a kid, Hush Puppies. Hush Puppy shoes. I want Hush Puppies, Mama. I want Hush Puppies. I want Hush Puppies. I want, you know, Saturday morning cartoon said I need to get, you know, Cap'n Crunch. You know, whatever it is. You know, it starts at a young age, and they just, you know, homogenize us. Well, now, you know, it's not the same anymore. You go traveling, every off-ramp has the same thing, the same gas stations, the same fast food, the same restaurant chains, the same, the same, the same, the same. Are we better off? I mean, where are we going with this? I mean, I don't mind. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's an evil, sinister, you know, whatever. I just, is it? But is it? What if you wanted to open, you're not a big chain, you wanted to open your own little motel thing? How many regulations you got to go through? How many licenses you got to buy? How many things you got to do? A friend of mine in Manhattan, he was the Manhattan city chair of the Libertarian Party, Jim Lozinski, and he's a really good activist. And he and I became good friends, and he decided a couple of years ago that he was going to open a check cashing facility. He was a cubicle warrior. he lived in a cube, and he's like, nah, I'm good. I'm done. I want to open my own business. And he accumulated enough resources he could do that. He spent 2 years just to get through all the regulation different places. You can't even get the permit to open the business until after you've signed a lease. He spent $10,000 just on the penalty he had to get, break the lease and so on, because they wouldn't give him a permit on the place that he had the lease he had to get before you can even seek the permit. No, good, no problem. It's not a problem. Go ahead. So these are the kind of things that, you know, we're killing ourselves. And we're supporting it. We're begging for it in many cases. We want to be socially and economically engineered. We want to have, I remember a good example. A friend of mine is in the late 80s, and we met at church, and we became really good friends, and our children, grew up together and so on. And he bought a new home in North Phoenix up here, which used to be, at the time, as desert. I mean, he was like the last housing development before you hit the desert. and it used to be like, 10 miles south when I first came here, and then it became further and further and further and further. And there were some businesses there that, after they moved in, they're going, hey, we don't want these businesses here. I'm like, weren't they here before you got here? They do the same thing with airports and all kinds of stuff. And what is the stinking thinking we got? I'm trying to come to grips with it. It's going to change. It's going to change a lot, and we need to get ready for it. And that's what we're talking about. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. There's another thing I wanted to put up here. We keep hearing about it a lot, and it's just, everybody jumps on whatever issue du jour. This is the big thing. What's the big thing now? Now it's immigration, of course, and they're going to bring in any and everything, for this. And I've seen this on my own site. Freedom's Phoenix, we have a columnist that posts there a lot. His name is Frosty Wooldridge. Frosty is he's an activist for immigration stopping. Ship them all back. And he goes at it from an environmental standpoint. He's like, the earth is, America is going to die and drained of all water and whatever and blah, blah, blah because of immigrants. And we've had him on the show, and I let him say his piece, man, go for it, knock yourself out. Go. Now, his brother, Howard Wooldridge, he is one of the, he's best known with LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, doing away with the drug war. And he came to our attention back, almost 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when he rode his horse across the country, just to promote this. He did a lot of media and so on. We became friends. And his brother, Frosty, was an activist for limits on immigration. And he had ridden his bicycle around the world. I mean, all over. Took his bike off in Antarctica and said, see, I did it, something. I mean, so he's been all over the place. Well, his thing in these third world countries, you're up close and personal on your bicycle, you're going, man, they live in squalor. And to try and make the argument with him that, well, I can tell you why, it's because they don't have property rights, or it's just, first, am I allowed not to care? I want to be able to not be forced to try and subsidize some. It's like Kathy Kelly we had on earlier saying, look, there's people, they don't have water. They don't have this. They don't have that. And I go, I can think a lot of things my kids don't have, my grandkids don't have. The whole purpose of America was to defend us against somebody else taking our stuff. be it our own government or others or for someone else, whatever. If I want to do it as a moral imperative on my own part, you know, for my own soul, for my own decision, for my own good, then I will. Leave me the capacity to be able to do so. I'd vote that. Well, Frosty was like, these people, and he's not necessarily saying we need to go save them. He just don't want the same thing to happen here, and he uses environmentalism as the reason for it. You know, there's nothing going on with the immigration thing. Doesn't come around environmental take on it. Well, I've seen that, you know, that theme is pushed by someone somewhere. And it's being funded. It's being pushed. He's being subsidized by, you know, I can tell. I can feel it. Well, we have a story on Freedom's Phoenix today, World Depopulation Plan on Fox News. Well, there's a gentleman he's talking about, we want to do away with illegal immigration because of population, they're having babies, it's, you know, all this stuff about America, it's, you know, and this issue is being used for that. And I just want to play a little bit of this to kind of get the idea and where this, I mean, what do you do? Shoot them? I mean, what do you do? Here we go. See what they have to say.
Thank you, Laura.
Rick, what does population stabilization mean, and how do you seek to enforce that?
Well, we're not the epigones of Malthus, as some would have you believe, but the world population is a concern. The Associated Press just has an article today saying that the world population is going to reach 7 billion people by the year 2012. We're 6.7 billion people today. And so, you know, what it means for Americans is unrestrained population growth. I'm a baby boomer. I was born in the middle of the last century. The population in the country has doubled in my lifetime. Those kids in high school today are going to see a half a billion people living in America. And the question we're asking is, why do we need to have this growth, and where is it coming from? And we've located the source.
Right.
Over 80% of it is coming from immigration, right, and the children that immigrants have.
Okay, so what do you propose? I'm going to go back to the basics here, because I'm just going to, like, let you carry on with this crazy idea that people are bad and we should have fewer of them, because I actually like people. I want to have more people. But let's say you're right, okay? How do you enforce your worldview? Is this an international body that somehow mandates population growth? I mean, China's trying that with its one-child policy, and then after the big natural disaster there, they're going, oh, maybe this isn't such a good idea after all. We're going to lose population.
Our concern is about American population growth and, of course, California. With 37 million people in California today, are going to be 60 million people in the next 2 to 3 decades.
So you have no idea.
And so,
Rick, I can't. This is driving me crazy. You're driving me crazy.
Do you have a plan, Rick?
You're spouting off things from an office in California. This is my question. You're saying something very controversial here, and I hope people understand what you're saying. You think there should be fewer people in the United States. I'm trying to figure out which people are the undesirables. And you pointed out you think immigrants are undesirable.
Oh, my God.
I guess
Yeah, this was being recorded off the TV by the person that put it up, so sometimes you'll hear him laughing in the background. But this, I want to stop it for a second before we continue, because I remember having this exact same conversation with Frosty. I'm going, okay, so let's say you're right. Now what? I mean, what is it exactly you're advocating? What is it that you want? What is it that you're looking to do? What is it the control that you have? There's something else going on behind this. Now, this is Fox News, and I'm not sure who she is, but she's definitely not buying it, but, you know, which is kind of surprising. But I'm just, what is behind this? Who's pushing this? What is the reasoning behind it? There are various groups, and I keep seeing a convergence. As the more I scratch the surface on this and I interview people and I talk to them, there was a common thread. National ID. The solution to all this was being able to number everybody. Being able to get IDs of these people. We need to track them. We need to get biometrics when they come in. We need to have, you know, papers, please, which means that we're going to have papers. You know, because if you're somebody, especially if you're driving around while brown, you know, it's a get on the ground and left jackboot and a right jackboot or the jackboot on your throat parties are going to be there saying what's what. So this is how this stuff happens. This is how it comes. Here we go.
Legal immigrants are undesirable, and all those children they have are undesirable. And, you know, I don't want illegal people here, but I don't want people to be killed either. So my question to you is, with your worldview,
this is unbelievable.
How do you enforce this one child per person utopia? How do you do it? Enough with the spouting. I don't want to hear that.
We don't use the word undesirable. What we want to do is to see the immigration laws enforced to cut down the numbers of the influx of illegal aliens into the country, which is driving almost all of the population growth in this country. We want the immigration laws enforced. We don't feel that it's a fair trade-off to leave open borders so employers can have access to cheap labor and to overpopulate the country for the future generation.
Okay, well, you and I agree about illegal immigration. Okay, we agree on one thing, that we need to enforce our borders, enforce our laws. But you go from that to saying, you know, population stabilization, which sounds a lot like population control, which sounds a lot like this crazy alarmism in the population bomb. I think that wasn't that the book in the 70s. All their predictions turned out to be completely ridiculous and never came to pass. So I want you to be real careful here, Rick, and you don't get into that those very murky waters. I think that's a dangerous place for you to go. You don't have to go that far to argue that America's a sovereign country and we should enforce our borders. I don't think you have to go that far.
Well, that's true. We also don't need to get to the Malthusian apocalypse or the predictions of the population bomb to understand that overpopulation decreases standards of living. We have problems
standards
with health care, education.
Increasing around the world. People are living longer around the world, Rick. The population, is going up, but we actually also have people who are being born who come up with cures for diseases, who innovate, who become entrepreneurs, and become, you know, wonderful, loving people who pass down a culture to the next generation. So I would agree with you. You have to manage these things, but the idea that you can somehow through, you know, I guess argument or column writing or whatever it is that you do, that somehow you're going to stop people from having children, I don't think that's the problem. I think it's standing up for your country and sovereignty, and that's fine. Do you see what I'm saying?
Our goal is to remind people that the population continues to grow faster than India or China, and that the source of that population growth is unrestrained immigration and the federal government not enforcing the immigration law. That's what's causing it. People are good. I've heard the argument, waiting for the mythical Mozart. Yes, there's geniuses that haven't been born yet.
Right.
But we're worried about this country and the future generations of this country and what they're going to have to deal with if we don't get control of our borders and our population.
Okay, but why are you focusing on the borders, though? If it's overpopulation, why does the borders even come into it? It's across the board. It's white, brown, and black, right? Or is it just brown skin people you don't think should be born?
Not at all. With us, it's not.
You're focusing on illegal immigration, and I think that gets you into a really, really murky territory. And
I appreciate it.
We're out of time.
Over 80% of our population growth is coming from immigrants and the children they have. That's where we want to see the federal government focus its efforts to enforce the borders and to cut down the numbers that are coming into the country.
Enforce the borders, yes. Don't use words like population stabilization. I get very protective over people living. I appreciate it, though. You're a stand-up guy to join us. And funny man Mike.
Wow. You can see the seeds of this stuff coming. You know, what do we have? We have the immigration issue is going to be used for population control. And that is the big, and I've seen this, and it's the same guys behind the same rhetoric, the same stuff that we get from Frosty Wooldridge. You know, there is a common drumbeat, and his is more international. He's like, I've been traveling around the world, too many people. What are we going to do about it? We got to get rid of, you know, the other people. I don't know whoever the other people are. Interesting times we're living in. Isn't that the Chinese curse? May you live in interesting times and come to the attention of powerful people.